open up your Bibles and open up to Genesis chapter 15. We'll be there for the majority of our time tonight. Last week we took some time in talking about covenants to realize in looking at the covenant that God made with Noah that it was a specific covenant. Noah had to respond. God gave him exactly the dimensions of the ark that he wanted, what he wanted it made out of, how he wanted it sealed, the animals, what they were supposed to do with those things, the food, what they were supposed to do with it. And Noah was going to have to follow that if he wanted to partake in God's covenant. Then after the flood, here's another covenant that God makes with mankind or even with the world. And he says, I'll never destroy earth again with water. And yet, man didn't have to respond in any way to that covenant. God was simply just going to do it. He made a covenant where there was no response needed. And then God gave a sign of that covenant, that he gave them a rainbow as that sign that he would never destroy the earth with water again the same way as he did before. It's kind of a curious thing about that sign. It's never shown until after the waters have already come and gone. Kind of an interesting way to leave a sign to the generations to come and even mankind. Tonight I want to look at a little bit different covenant, looking at Genesis 15, a covenant that God makes with Abram. Basically, Abram has just come back from fighting in a war. He has gone out with 318 men and overcome, make sure I pronounce this right, Kedorlaomer Mer. All right, that'll be good enough. You can look back in chapter 14 to see him and to get an idea. And after they've overcome, Abram runs into Melchizedek and he offers him 10% of everything that he has. And God has granted him the victory to overcome these other four kings that have been there. You get down to chapter 15, and I want you to see the very first thing that God tells Abram. It says, after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, do not fear, Abram. I am a shield to you. Your reward shall be very great. He tells him in a roundabout and even in a simple way, he says, you have nothing to fear, Abram. I'm going to give you a promise. He says, I'm going to be a shield to you. Think about what a shield does for a warrior. It's made to capture the arrows that are sent your way or any kind of flying debris that may come at you or even horses or anything along those lines to help to fight them off. God says, Abram, I'm going to be your shield. You have nothing to fear. And he says, and your reward is going to be very great. Then, verse 2, Abram responds. He says, O Lord God, what will you give me since I am childless and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus? He says, you're promising a very great reward, but how can I even have a great reward? I don't even have an heir of my own household. I don't even have a child. He says, my heir is just, this mentions this individual from Damascus, verse 3. And Abram said, since you have given no offspring to me, one born in my house is my heir. In other words, a slave that had been born in his own house. That was going to be his best heir, not a blood relative. Then look at the next verse, verse 4. Then behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, this man will not be your heir, but one who will come forth from your own body. He shall be your heir. Notice what he tells him. He says, I've got another promise for you. You're going to have a son. He's going to come from your own body. From your own loins. He's going to be of your blood. He's going to be of your line. Don't fear. He says, you have nothing to be afraid of. Your reward's going to be great. I'm going to give you a son. And then I want you to notice what God does next. Look at verse 5. And he took him outside and said, now look toward the heavens and count the stars, if you are able to count them. And he said to them, so shall your descendants be. I want you to imagine this. It says in Genesis 1:14 that the stars were going to be for signs and seasons and things along that line. And that's exactly what they were for. It's kind of interesting. In Genesis 1:14, God is already declaring what he's going to do, in a sense, for Abraham or for Abram here before his name changes. God tells Abram, go outside and look up. I'm sure you can kind of imagine a night where you saw a countless amount of stars in the sky. A night where you looked up and it was just a clear night. God tells Abram, Go out and look up. And then God says, can you count the stars? You can imagine Abram. I don't know whether he started to try to count or not, but to look at him and to go, no, I can't. I've never seen a night where you could try and count them. Whether they be few or many, it's still too much. I want you to notice something else here. He says at the end of verse 5, he says, so shall your descendants be. He says, you're not just going to have one son and that'll be the end of it. He says, you're going to have so many descendants that they're going to be like the stars. Now, hold your place here because we're going to come back. I want to show us just one little thing on the side here. Look at Psalm 147. And look at verse 4. Here's what's being said about the Lord. He heals the brokenhearted. He binds up their wounds. And then look at verse 4. He counts the number of the stars. He gives names to all of them. If you have a footnote on verse 4, it might even say, and he calls them all by their names. To realize, whenever God sees the stars, he doesn't see bright lights from long distances away. He sees stars with names. He can count them all. And not only can he count them, he can tell you exactly what the names are. And what's an interesting parallel here to me is, whenever God, in Genesis 1, talks about that the stars would be given for signs, and here he comes to Abram and says, go outside. Look at the stars. From Psalm 147, you can hear God saying, I know all their names, do you? And here's Abram to look up and to count. What's kind of curious is you notice here, he says, so shall your descendants be. I want you to notice Abram's reaction. Look at verse 6, back in Genesis 15. Says, then he believed in the Lord, and he reckoned it to him as righteousness. Abram went out that night, and he saw all those stars, and he knew that he didn't have a single child on the earth. And he says, he thinks, I believe you. He looked up at all those stars, and he said, that's how many descendants I'm going to have. And God looked at him, and he reckoned him, or he credited to him as righteousness. This is the first time you start to see a true idea of promises given with a response of faith. There are other times through the book of Genesis where you could kind of see that, but this is really one of the first times where it's actually kind of spelled out for us. I want you to notice the next verse, verse 7, because the conversation continues as they go here. And he said to him, talking about God said to Abram, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldees to give you this land to possess it. He says, I brought you out of there because I already had a plan for you. I want to give you this land that you stand on now. Then verse 8, Abram responds. He said, O Lord God, how may I know that I will possess it? Notice what Abram asks. He doesn't ask, is that really true? He doesn't say, I'm not so sure about this. There sure are a lot of stars out tonight. He says, how can I know that I will possess it? How can I really know that? What's kind of curious is, it's always been faith. Think about anything. Even through the miraculous things that happened, if you didn't already have faith, miracles wouldn't give you faith. If you weren't showing a faithful response to God, then whatever happened in front of you, you would just deem as countless and worthless. And so Abram comes here and he tells God, how may I know that I will possess it? Look at the next verse. God responds, verse 9. So he said to him, bring me a 3-year-old heifer and a 3-year-old female goat and a 3-year-old ram and a turtle dove and a young pigeon. I bet that might not be exactly what Abram had in mind. He says, how am I going to know? How am I going to know that I'm going to possess it? And he says, well, go get a 3-year-old heifer, a 3-year-old female goat, and get a 3-year-old ram and a turtle dove and a pigeon. Bring them here. Okay. Verse 10. Then he brought all these things to him and cut them in two and laid each half opposite the other. But he did not cut the birds. The picture here, it doesn't say how they're cut in two. In my mind, they're cut perhaps along the backbone of each one of those animals and laid into two pieces apart from each other. As if to say, the only way that this piece could fit with something else is if it goes with this other half over here. And to do that with the 3-year-old heifer, the 3-year-old female goat, and the 3-year-old ram. And to take the two birds and to lay them there as well. Although it says here they're not cut the same way. Look at the next verse, verse 11. It says, the birds of prey came down upon the carcasses, and Abram drove them away. Other things start to come in to want to take off these carcasses. But Abraham works, and he says, he shakes them away or drives them away so that they're not allowed to eat up these carcasses that are here. Now, look at verse 12. Now when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram. And behold, terror and great darkness fell upon him. All of a sudden, after he brings in these animals, these five animals, darkness falls over. The sun goes down. What's kind of curious is, as the sun goes down, the stars come out. But here, it doesn't bring out that point. It says, terror and great darkness fell upon him. Now remember, he's just been carrying on this conversation with God. And he's come to question God. Not necessarily questioning whether God can do it, but he says, how can I know that I'm going to possess it? He tells him to go get the animals. He brings the animals. And then the sun sets. And it says here, a great darkness fell upon him. I don't exactly understand what a great darkness is other than just darkness. Maybe it means pitch black. I don't know. I've been in caves where they turn all the lights off, and man, it gets dark. And you can't tell if you're flicking your own nose or somebody else is doing it for you. I mean, you just can't tell. And it's so dark. And I think that's kind of the picture. It is just dark. And they don't do that very much anymore because people get terrified. People get terrified when it gets dark. And that's exactly the kind of response that you have here. Even Abram, terror comes over him with his great darkness. Look at verse 13. God said to Abram, now keep in mind, here's God talking to him and it's pitch dark. It's a great darkness of some sorts. It'd be one thing to talk to God in the day. Seems like here there'd be a little bit different response to think of it as darkness all around you and to hear the voice of God. He says, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. He says, know this for certain. We're going to go ahead and fill in the other side of these promises. Sure enough, the people of God are in Egypt for a long time, and they're oppressed for 400 years, and it's exactly the way God said it would be. That's exactly what happens to him in Exodus. So you see God saying, here's the way it'll be. Then, look at verse 14. He says, but I will also judge the nation whom they will serve, and afterward they will come out with many possessions. Here he is talking about Egypt again. He's going to bring judgment on Egypt with those 12 plagues. And sure enough, in Exodus 12:36, it says that whenever they left, they basically plundered Egypt on the way out. People were willing to give them anything as long as they would leave. And that is exactly what God said would happen way back here. Look at the next verse, verse 15. He says, as for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You will be buried at a good old age. Over in Genesis 25, verses 7 and 8, Abram, whose name changes into Abraham, lives to be 175 years old. That sounds like a good old age. What's curious, in Genesis 25, it says he died ripe and old and satisfied with life. I think that satisfied with life has always made me curious. I don't know exactly what that means, but it sounds good. 175 years old. Here's God telling Abram, and God's going to fulfill it. Look at the next verse, verse 16. Then in the fourth generation they will return here, talking about to the land of Canaan. He says, for the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet complete. He says the Amorites are still building up their iniquity, and it's not yet complete for the time when they'll be destroyed. But in the fourth generation, after they come out of Egypt, they'll destroy the Amorite. What's curious is Abram knew who the Amorites were. He knew who they were. It wasn't a question mark kind of thing about like some country that's later on going to be real big, like Egypt. God doesn't mention Egypt by name, but I want you to notice the next verse in verse 17. Here's everything that's going to start to come together. It says, it came about when the sun had set that it was very dark. Now notice again it comes back to this idea of very dark. In other words, you can't see anything around you. Before the sun had set, Abram drives away those birds that were trying to eat the carcasses. Here, it says, very dark. It says, and behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a flaming torch which passed between these pieces. Remember those animals that were laid out, cut in half, and laid on either side, apart from each other? In the middle of all this darkness, and after what God says in verses 13 through 16, then comes this picture of a smoking oven and a flaming torch. All of a sudden, the darkness is brought into light. All of a sudden, God starts to point out, Abram, I see clear where you don't. He had laid out those animals. Abram couldn't see a thing. It was so dark that he got terrified. And here's God. We know it from later on, speaking of promises and knowing full well the exact timing of all the fulfillment of those promises. Ripe old age, fourth generation, 400 years, Amorite people going to be destroyed. And after all that darkness was there, then you see this flaming torch and this smoking oven. I can't imagine a traveling smoking oven, but that's what it says. Flaming torch gives me a better picture. The picture is God walking through the middle of, here's the promise that I made, the first half of those animals that were cut into. And here's the fulfillment of all those promises. Where all you see is darkness and emptiness and have no clue, God says, I see everything clear. The same way you see it now that it's lit up with this torch. And this smoking oven. And here's God saying, how can you know that you'll possess this land? Because I promised it. And I see clear where you see darkness. Look at the actual promise that comes here in verse 18. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, with Abram. Here's the covenant that God made. God's been making promises through here, but now he comes to the idea of covenant. He says, here's what I'm agreeing to do. The rest of verse 18. To your descendants I have given this land, from the river of Egypt as far as the great river, the river Euphrates. Notice he brings up Egypt by name now. He says, from the river of Egypt, that's the Nile River, as far as the great river, that's the Euphrates. Abram knew about those things. Abram had come from the Ur of Chaldees. He had come across the Euphrates River. He knew all that territory down. Now I want you to notice what he says about these next 10 peoples. Look at them. The Kenite, the Kenizzite, the Kadmonite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Rephaim, the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Girgashite, and the Jebusite. Now those names might not mean a hill of beans to you, but they meant everything to Abram. The Amorite, he already knew about them. And I'm guessing he already knew about how wicked they were. the Jebusite, those are the people that lived around Jerusalem. These other people, as they're all around in Canaan, it'd be kind of similar to if somebody said to us, you live in Jeff City? God says, I'm going to give you Taos. I'm going to give you Eugene and Russellville. I'm going to give you Centertown. I'm going to give you Holt Summit. I'm going to give you Ashland. I'm going to give you Columbia. I'm going to give you Wardsville. I'm going to give you California. I'm going to give you Camdenton and the Lake of the Ozarks. All these peoples he knew, just like we know all those towns. When God tells him those things, Abram can know, I know exactly what you're talking about. And now Abram comes to realize, now I can see clearly what only you see in darkness. Now I can come to see what's been revealed of what you said. Sometimes that's the idea behind covenant. God simply makes the covenant, and he says, you may not be able to see any of this, but God says, I see it clearly. It's lit up like a torch night in front of me. Now, here it was with Abram. What's kind of curious is God doesn't tell him, only if you do this or only if you do that. The thing is, Abram has already responded out of faith. He's already said, I believe you that this land will be mine. How can I know it? And God says, because I see clearly even where you see darkness. I've given you promises, and the only thing that can go together with those promises are the fulfillment of those promises, just like those halves of animals would go together. Where the bones had been broken, they could be put back together. Almost to see a puzzle piece, like there's one part that's been promised and here's the fulfillment, and they dovetail together. Sometimes that's the idea behind covenant. Now, I want us to see this picture even a step beyond. Of course, they do in generations to come. In the fourth generation, after they've been in Egypt, they take over Canaan. God keeps his promise. He keeps his covenant, just like he keeps them forever, just like he's done with the world now. Let's look at one more thing, and then we'll close. Look at Galatians chapter 3. Look down at verse 6. Back in Genesis 22, God asks Abram to offer up his only begotten son. Now, he does have another son by the name of Ishmael, but he brings up Isaac in a special way. And he asks for him to offer up Isaac as a burnt offering on Mount Moriah, which is later on going to be the place where the temple is. And in doing that, it's a 3 days journey to get to Mount Moriah. Curiously enough, that's two nights. Two nights where Abraham would sit out, perhaps before he went to bed, and he could look up at the stars, and he could remember God's promise. He could remember exactly what God told him. Here's Abram who's going, how could I offer up my only son? I won't have any descendants like this. And for him to remember God's promise and to put faith in that promise. Curious, in Hebrews 11, he even says, Abraham believed that God could raise his son back up from ashes after being offered as a burnt offering. To think of for two nights in a row for Abram to look up and see a continual sign of that covenant. The rainbow only comes out after the rain. The stars come out almost every night. Anytime you want to go out and look, you're free to gawk all you want. And for Abram, you're free to remember as often as you want the covenant that's been made. about all the descendants that there would be. Look here in Galatians 3, and look as it talks about Abram. You'll remember these verses from the Old Testament. Even so, Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. You remember that from Genesis 15:6. He believed him. He said, "You promised it. I know that's the way it'll be." Verse 7. Therefore, be sure that it is those who are of faith who are sons of Abraham. Notice who just got tied together. If we respond out of faith to God's covenant, it says here that we're descendants of Abraham. You know what we just became? We just became stars. We just became those names that God knew for all of those stars that were out at night. He says, if we're people who work off of faith, somewhere out there, there's a star with our name on it. We don't know the names. We see darkly. But God sees clearly where we see darkness. Be sure that it is those who are of faith who are sons of Abraham. We're Abraham's descendants if we respond out of faith to covenant. Look at verse 8. The Scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, even the Gentiles come in by faith, not just the Jews, preached the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, all the nations will be blessed in you. Look at the timing here. You ever wondered who was the first person that got to hear a gospel message? Would you have guessed Abraham? That's what it says. Curious, huh? All the nations will be blessed in you. Jesus worked off of faith. And even he's a descendant of Abraham. That's why we're all blessed in him. And we're going to respond out of faith too. Look at verse 9. He says, so then, those who are of faith are blessed with Abraham, the believer. He says, the same blessing. To think about all those great things that were promised. He says, because we'll work off of faith with covenant, because we'll be like Abram, and whenever all we hear are the promises of God, and all we see is darkness, we know to trust our God because he sees clearly even in darkness. To think of that picture, it's a little ironic. In the middle of this great expanse of the universe, the great expanse of darkness, God says, I'm going to make you a light. He says, you're a star. I know your name and I know which one you are. To me, one of the scariest things, it used to be fun as a kid. You'd see a shooting star across the night sky and it'd light up for a little bit and then go away. If you tie that into these thoughts, there's a believer that just lost faith. How sad is that? I think that's there for a reminder for us. What if we choose to not take faith? What if we choose to just push it aside and say, God, I don't understand your promises and I'm not going to respond. I don't care that you see clearly. I don't see a thing. Terror sets in. And the star goes black. And to understand for us, if we're going to be people who respond to covenant, we're going to have to say to God, you see clearly where all we see is darkness. And we'll trust you. Even if it means we don't understand. That's part of covenant. That's part of what's been given. Hopefully the next time, whenever we go through and talk about covenant, we'll talk a little bit more about the old covenant and even talk a little bit about the new. If there's anyone here tonight.